code's Kill Kittens and customer service is an oxymoron. One podcast has set out to make things right. This is the Unpodcast with your hosts, Scott Stratton and Allison Kramer.
We do hope you're having a fantastic summer. Welcome to the summer solstice edition of the Unpodcast. Now, it is summer, so we kind of skipped a week, and that's what we're going to do because there's seven of you, and we could handle you in a fight if you decided. But on the show today, this is our kind of HR hooked one. Now, if you're not in HR, don't worry. We keep it relevant. We keep it real. It's for everybody. We have a bunch of different things. The lemonade legal situation in the world, you've heard of it. We're going to address that today. Hard-hitting news. Things about one of our favorite gas stations ever and what they do to try to attract and retain people. What if we kill the job interview? What? And then also a really cool way that Rent the One Runway's co-founder is looking at people and looking at work. All that and absolutely positively nothing more. Brought to you by Nova Fitness in Oakville.
Not really.
They are our unsponsored today, which means they have no knowledge of us talking about them, nor did they pay us. I just got back from my personal training session with Lance. And who we could not take on in a fight.
No, by the definitely way. Not.
So we love our gym, and I hate them. That's it. That's the whole thing. I do not like any of them there. They're all wonderful people. They're wonderful trainers, qualified, kind.
You just don't like working out.
It hurts.
It does.
And now we have I have a level of judging how hard it is today. It's called the Kate scale. And Kate being one of the trainers there who filled in for my trainer one day, and it wasn't pleasant. Really good. Really good trainer. And just was, she said terrible things to me, like, do that again. And actually do it this time and things like that. So today was on a Kate scale of 6.
A 6?
Yeah, that's right.
That's not too bad. I was still a little bit stuck on the fact that we have a favorite gas station.
Right? Yeah, that's coming up.
That's so what I was thinking about.
Don't change that dial. Does anybody know that reference under 35?
Probably don't know what a dial is.
Oh, exactly. We still call things like record stores, changing that dial. Is that still a thing? Albums.
Do we have record stores anymore?
Yeah.
There's a couple.
They're coming back, baby. Yeah, they're coming back. But when somebody releases do they say album still?
I think it's more songs, isn't it?
Well, Drake just dropped an album.
Well, there you go. If right? Drake can do it.
Right. Well, my mixtape comes out in August. So let's fly.
All right. I have our first story today from CNN.com. And it says, for kids getting busted for running lemonade stands without permits, these guys are here to help. So many of us had lemonade stands growing up. I had lemonade stands growing up. The kids had lemonade stands growing up. We met each other.
My first tweet to you was about your lemonade stand, yes.
Yeah, I tweeted something about my kids running a lemonade stand, and that was the first time Scott ever talked to me.
And in hindsight,
so there you go.
In hindsight, very creepy tweet I sent. Really.
It was like 9 years ago this month, like next week.
Yep.
Oh, that's cool. I hadn't thought about that.
So don't make me put Un Jr., who's Owen, in the car.
Totally
and come
made
down
up,
there.
By the way. There's no way he said that.
No.
No, you totally made it up.
Oh, 100%. I used one of the kids as a pawn.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yada, 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 here we are.
Well, it worked.
Right? Thank you. Lying and creepy tweets. That's the way to your heart.
There were some women in my Pilates class talking about online dating. Like the class that was before me, they were chatting as I was going in and they were talking about online dating. And there was kind of a pause. And I said, well, I met my husband on Twitter. Does that count? And they didn't think it did, but I think it does. All right. So back to our lemonade stands. It says it's a hallmark tradition of American and Canadian, I will add, childhood. But in recent years, kids selling this cool drink are getting heat for not having proper permits. Now a company known for its lemonade mix is stepping in to keep these sidewalk shops running. Country Time Lemonade is creating a team to help pay fines and permits for kids nationwide who want to run their own lemonade stands. And in the spirit of the drink's name, they're calling the initiative Legal Aid. Pause for laughter.
Get it? Lemonade? Legal Aid?
It says the group will cover fees up to $300, which I'm pretty sure with a lawyer gets you half a phone call, but $300 for stands that were fined in 2017 and 18 because they didn't have permits. I can honestly say we never had a permit. Mm-hmm. Did you ever have a permit for a lemonade stand?
Here's the thing. If you are a municipality and you have ever fined a child for a lemonade stand, You should lose your designation as a municipality. You should lose your job.
I think that you should have to prove there were no other crimes. Like, you should have, if you're finding...
There's no bylaw infractions that day.
It's like, if you find the kid for the lemonade stand, then you should have to show in court there were no theft, no arson, no other crimes, no car accidents,
And this is bylaws, right? So it's a bylaw officer. So it's meaning like no illegal parking. No, you know, full-scale barbecues
like
happening at ball games.
That has to be the most important crime going on. Yeah. Otherwise, it should be able to be thrown out.
And can I just say, as a social commentary, can white people, can we just stop calling the cops on African-Americans who are doing things like mowing lawns and lemonade stands and...
Seems to be an epidemic.
Selling water outside of buildings. Can you just stop being that?
It says last week, and this article is from this year, so very recently, it's from June. Last week, two Denver brothers selling lemonade for charity, even worse, they're selling lemonade for charity, saw their stand get shut down because they didn't have a permit. In Texas, two sisters set up a lemonade stand to raise money for a Father's Day present, but they were shut down and fined for not having a permit or health department approval. And in Maryland, fines for permitless stands have reached a hefty $500.
Stop.
It's crazy. They're raising money for charity.
Yeah.
I think that's insane. I think we should keep having lemonade stands. Keep those bylaw officers busy.
It's fine. Did you make your kids... reimburse the costs of the ingredients?
Yeah, we made it into a little project. So we were like, okay, so they wanted to sell lemonade. Right. And so we had to buy lemonade to sell lemonade.
Yeah.
So then we talked about like how much lemonade would be. And then like one of those frozen, you know, the frozen lemonade. It might have even been the Country Time lemonade. Then you, how much those cost and how much they were going to sell them for. And then there was always a lot of negotiation because... our youngest is the best salesperson. I think we can all agree that she is the natural salesperson of the group.
Yep.
But her older brothers were doing the organizing and much of the heavy labor, let's say. But she was selling all the lemonade. Yeah. So then
she's the lead singer. She's
They were trying to shortcut her because she's younger and because she wasn't doing like the math and she hadn't paid for the stuff and all this kind of stuff. But she was the one moving the lemonade.
Yeah.
So yeah, we made
sales always gets paid the best.
We made it into a little. We had to convince them to add her name. Like she was to the sign. She was,
It's like in music, right? The lead singer sings a song, but if they didn't write it, they ain't making the money, right? So I get it.
They
wouldn't have
sold any lemonade.
She should be
she
on.
She hadn't been there.
She should work on a pure commission basis.
She is definitely the natural.
I see her doing
person.
That. I see her. She goes into sales, right? She's pure commission, and she make $1.5 million a year.
And fundraising, she's incredible at fundraising. She like Terry Fox run. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Do they do that in the States? Is that a purely Canadian thing?
Canadian, I think.
Okay,
one of our seven can let us know.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. But so yearly fundraiser, and she goes door to door in the neighborhood, always raises hundreds and hundreds of dollars. Yeah. Like, and her brothers just ask us for enough money to meet the minimum requirement to do the run. So yeah, she's a natural fundraiser for sure.
Well, that's different now too. I remember being in HR, we had to create policies for fundraising where you couldn't go to each person's desk and ask. We talked about this a couple years ago on the show, right?
Yeah.
Where you can't walk up to somebody's desk and ask them to donate to your kid's school fundraiser for whatever it is because of the pressure it puts on to you. And if you say no, you're not allowed to say no. And so a lot of the policies happen where you could leave the fundraiser catalog and stuff for whatever, the fudge
like
or the wrapping
paper
in the kitchen. And that was it. And you were not allowed because especially not only what it causes for your peers if you say no, what if you say no to your boss?
Yeah.
Right? I don't want wrapping paper.
It's like solicitation or something.
500 yards of wrapping paper.
Plus, if everyone's doing them, then there are so many of them.
I appreciate, I appreciate your Christmas theme wrapping paper. I'm Jewish. Like, that's where, and you can't say no. And people always say, one of the things that somebody told me once is like, this is like a bachelor or bachelorette party or a stag and doe where you give money, but eventually, if you get married or something, it all comes back, right? Everybody, it's all equal. But what happens if you don't have kids?
Yeah.
You're not hitting it up for everybody for money and it's not going to come back. And it's not like, well, I'll give you $25 this time. And when I come back around, you just, you know, you throw it back at me. It doesn't happen that way. So for us, it's just like, it's just even door to door. I remember going door to door.
Yeah.
Right. And raising money. And now it's like, ooh, there's rules and you're not knocking on doors. And, but then we have Facebook. So who knows?
Whole other way to get money from people.
Right, exactly. So, good on them.
What story do you have?
I dig them. So let's talk about our favorite gas station. So
which we have.
Yeah, so legendary place. So by the way, I've spoken once and I have a second engagement, a repeat engagement, which is rare for good old Scott here. for the like the convenience store association. So it's convenience stores and gas stations, and so one of the infamous ones of those. And I can't wait. I'm going to Vegas to go to the convenience store trade show in Vegas. What some people may not remember or know is I'm a big fan of international snacks. I am a huge international snack
fan. A connoisseur, even, you
really,
could say.
Really, I'm more of almost a historian. Mm-hmm. And so when we go to Istanbul or Thailand, my favorite place to go is a convenience store. And Allison's like, we are in Istanbul.
We should probably go to the spice market. And he's like, we got to go to the convenience store first. They I have to see what kind of chips they have.
They have wasabi Kit Kat here. I don't even eat the stuff most of the time. I just like to see it.
And sometimes you bring it home. You like to bring it home for the kids.
So I go speak at this convenience store association gig, and I get the stuff that's not on the market yet.
I was honestly, it's the only gig you've ever done where I was a little bit concerned you might not come home. Between it being in Vegas and it being this particular product group, I thought he may just travel with the conference, like the circus.
Show.
Like he just runs away with the conference.
I got fire Sour Patch Kids.
They like them, though.
So hot Sour Patch Kids was I got before it came out on the market.
Like, and it's the kids just, like them.
Yeah, fascinating. So anyways, one of the legendary places, you know, there's in the States, especially there's Sheetz and there's a bunch of them. We have a lot of here. Circle K has really taken over in Canada, especially. But our old days, if you got anybody listening or remembers, like Becker's.
And Max Milk.
Max Milk and stuff like that. We even had a local one. This is independent ones like Trio Mart in Oakville. And it's always a place, you know, as a kid, you're like, you save up your money, you go get a Kit Kat bar, O. Henry or something, a pack of gum. Some of us stole them. You know, whatever it worked, whatever floated your boat at the time. That's where I used to buy baseball cards, right? We'd go shovel a driveway for $10. We'd go buy 1989 Donruss packs of cards with all of our money. And then then OPC hockey cards and Needham got them out back. And you have some formative times at these places. And we didn't have a lot of money back then.
No, I know. Yeah, I can tell. It meant a lot to you.
So I had heard. So my brother lives in Texas and he sends me a text one day. He's like, have you been to Bucky's? And I'm like, there is a lot of things this could be right now, what Bucky's could be. And I'm going to let you continue to talk until I assume what this place is. And, is it a male version of Hooters? Is it like, what is the thing here it's going to be? Or a spinoff of Hooters? And so he's like, it's a gas station. I'm like, why would you ask me if I've been to a gas station? Like, I love convenience stores. I'm like, that's what? He's like, no, you gotta go. It's like a destination gas station. It's got like 100 pumps and it's got 100 fountain drink stations. They have an entire aisle of pickles. Pickles.
A whole aisle of pickles? Mm-hmm. That's incredible.
There's an America section and it's full of America. You can't go more America than this America section. Jesus section, jerky section. A whole like cafeteria. Yeah. It all goes down the thing, right down to zebras. And it is a sight to see out front where most gas stations put like firewood, the ice, big machine and oil. They have, I'm not exaggerating. They have, when I went to Bucky's because I had a gig in Austin and one in Dallas and I drove and I could have flown.
But he drove.
I drove.
So that
I rented
he could
a
go
car
to
go to Bucky's. And I went out and out front of Bucky's, just on the little walkway, there's 25 barbecues for sale. On display. So they have more in the back. 25 smokers, not barbecues, don't be confused, children. And then 15 deep fryers.
In front of the store?
Out front. On display, like you'd see a place put out maybe a patio furniture section in the summer. That's the impulse buy. When you just filled up.
Oh, I also take a smoker.
I could use a 20-gallon smoker. Yeah, just put that in the truck because they're all in trucks there. And I went in, it was my Disney World. It was glorious. And so it's obviously a huge thing in Texas. They're expanding now. So anyways, from Business Insider, they are talking about Bucky's puts it out there when it comes to salaries, benefits, and vacation policies. Of course, in the era of job sites like LinkedIn, Glassdoor, and Indeed, employees around the world are shining a light on previously obscure and touchy workplace subjects like pay and benefits. Nowadays, people increasingly want transparency when it comes to pay. Bucky's is one company that bucks the trend by preempting questions surrounding compensation. All 33 locations of the Texas-based convenience store chain have signs displaying information about pay for entry-level and managerial roles, company-wide vacation policies, and other benefits. The signs have been around for as long as Jeff Nadalo, who's the general counsel, can recall. So they list So there's a picture of the sign right hanging in the store, and it's like Bucky's minimum wage, cashier warehouse is $14 to $16 an hour, food service, maintenance, or car wash, $15 to $17, team leader, $16 to $19 an hour, assistant is $19 and up. It says 40-plus hour work weeks available, 401k, and 3 weeks paid time off. Use it, cash it, roll it. Right, which is you use the vacation, cash it,
and it's all displayed
it
in the store, so right up you front. Know exactly how much everyone else is getting paid.
Yeah.
Without them singling people out. Like, when you first told me, I was worried it was like, well, Susie makes, but it isn't like that. Like, it's very
right.
private.
And so they pay a few dollars an hour above. And it's just one of those things they say, you can see it, you know, and it shows you that you can even climb up more as well, which is a great recruitment tool. Now, I looked up Bucky's on Glassdoor, which is like the Yelp for employees, and they average 3 out of 5 stars, which is not a great rating, but really great for that industry.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's supposed to be high turnover, and it's I'm putting air quotes here, kids. It's low skilled labor, and look, anybody who can deal with gas station people driving between two major cities in Texas, you know, deserves a medal. And there's a lot of jerky to stock all the time, and I think the transparency is amazing because I, coming from an HR background, one of the biggest issues that I had seen in the industry was pay transparency, to the point their policy was, and our policy at our, you can't discuss your pay with others, which I think should be highly illegal, telling people they can't do that. It's my pay. And in HR, I knew everybody's pay as it was, and you can't discuss it. Why? Because then it causes, and this is the problem, I think the policy of not discussing compensation breeds inequality.
Well, and there are assumptions then that are made, right?
Right.
You're making assumptions that somebody's getting paid more than you and it's unfair. And this keeps things clear and obvious and out in the open. And it also shows people who are coming into the store who might be looking for a job or something that they pay fair wages and the people who work there are paid fair wages.
Right.
And I like it.
But I think, and if we don't show it, especially in a salaried industry, where it's just not flat hourly, that's where pay inequality can really thrive if we don't talk about it.
Especially telling them you can't talk about it.
Like,
that's even, you're not even omitting it. You're basically saying you can't discuss it, which is one step worse.
And pay equity isn't about same pay, same job. There really isn't, in a structured salary position, it's not about women making less than men in a same job. This is the myth that women make 79 cents, 84 cents, whatever it is an hour compared to a male. It's not about the same job in a company. Usually there's a pay band and they're paid about the same. It's comparable jobs in other departments that have usually traditionally and biasly female versus male. Payroll, HR, female-dominated positions. Sales is a male-dominated position in certain industries. Marketing is a male-dominated industry in certain industries. And so and administrative is a female-dominated side of things in most industries. So the pay equity is you have to judge on a, whether it's the Hay system, whether it's a couple of ways of undercompensation, say, what is the value of this position? And this is the score. And if that position is not paid the same as a comparable position in another department, that's when there's a pay equity issue. So does that make sense? Where it really breeds the real problems. It's not that I'm an HR generalist, which I was, and I was getting $42,000 a year, and somebody working the same job in the department was getting $36,000 a year, just simply because it was male or female. It's not usually that obvious, which is why it can breed
not
so
usually,
well.
But sometimes. But,
yes, but I mean, like, that's why it can become systemic. And then you realize now we have this gap and it doesn't make sense. And people make the excuse of, well, this is a different skill set or a different labor pool. And it's not. When we create silence, we breed inequality. And when you say you can't discuss your pay with somebody else simply for the fact that somebody doesn't want to find out they're making less or more than somebody, then that's part of the problem. It really is.
Absolutely.
My pay, my call, whether to discuss it or not. And if you get a pay stub from somebody else by mistake and you open it, well. Then you find out they make much more than you thought.
I have a compensation story as well. This is from CNN again. Both my stories are from CNN. And it says, this is about Rent the Runway. So if you're not familiar with Rent the Runway, it's a great company. It was started by Jennifer Hyman. There's a wonderful on How I Built This. He interviewed her and she gave a great interview about how she thought of the idea and where it came from.
It was a
really, really great interview. If anyone wants to go listen to it, we suggest it. We recommend it. So it says in May of this year, the 37-year-old CEO announced the company will offer the same benefits to all 1,200 of its employees. Everyone from salaried C-suite executives to hourly warehouse workers will have the same bereavement, parental, and family leave and sabbatical packages. And she says she thinks it's just the right thing to do. What's interesting about it is it wasn't always like that. She explains how when she first started the company, she set things up the way she'd seen them done before.
Right.
Which is that employees that were higher up were got better compensation and they got more support. And people who were frontline workers or support workers got less. And she wrote kind of a really great quote that I liked. She wrote, so when they launched the new policy, she wrote an sort of like an op-ed piece in the New York Times about why she had done it. She felt it was important to explain. And she said, I had inadvertently created classes of employees and by doing so had done my part to contribute to the to America's inequality problem. And she basically said it's not one person's pregnancy is not more important than another person's pregnancy. One person's dead relative is not more important than another person's dead relative. And that she wanted to have it be as equal as possible. And she goes on to kind of explain, like she says, our company wouldn't exist and wouldn't be around without our warehouse employees and our call center employees. And these employees not just rent the runway, but at tens of thousands of other companies throughout the country are treated unequally. By no means are rent the runway benefit policies the most generous in the country right now. They're not, but they're the right policies financially for where our business is today and the promise that I made to my employees as Rent the Runway gets bigger. So I like this. We talk a lot about, you know, when a company is growing, some of the mistakes that happen. We talked about it a lot in Unselling. You know, how do your policies change as you when you start out and you start to add employees and it starts to grow? And sometimes, and almost always actually, the policies you had when you were 10 people are not the same policies you can use when you're 100 people or 1,000 people or like Rent the Runway, 1,200 people. And so I like that taking stock of it and deciding that she was going to make a big change to put everyone on the same footing. I really, really like that.
Right. Me too. I love it. There's a story in there too about she having a seamstress in the warehouse that was going to quit.
Yeah.
Because she had to take leave for her daughter, her daughter's pregnancy or something.
Yeah, I think so.
And then she's realized she's going to stay because she has the leave. Because she asked, can I take this leave because of my... And she's like, yes. And that she kept the... Now, here's the thing. And it's just like big-ass fans, right? Where, how do you think those people feel now, right? When they can take the leave and they take the time... And do it. And that's how it was my argument in HR when people said, you know, you can only take sick leave if you're sick. And I'm like, what happens if you have your kid's sick? What, like, then you have to lie? You have to do it? Like, you know what's worse than being sick is one of your kids being sick. Like, that was a huge, and I wanted to change that where sick leave was based on also who you care for. Right. And that's a big part of that. Canada's very proactive in that and one of the better countries in the world that allows for not only bereavement leave but also personal leave. It's mandated now in Canada to allow a certain amount of personal leave as well, where you don't need a note, you don't need anything else. But then you have some companies that are like, you know what, to get bereavement you got to bring the death certificate in.
I just think it sets up this differentiating in value between people.
Right.
And it's one of the things that we talk about is the people who are in the warehouse are the people who actually touch. In her case, these fancy, incredibly fancy dresses and packages them up and clothing and packages them up. Do you really want a person doing that, actually touching? Yeah. They're the last person to touch the product before it gets to your customer. Do you want them to feel like they aren't an equal part, that they aren't respected in your company? I don't think so. Or the people doing the call center stuff, you want those people to feel like they are important? Because these are the people who your customers talk to. Yeah. They don't talk to your VP of marketing. They don't talk, like, that's not who people see. So it should be valued at least equally in terms of what they bring to the company.
I'd put money on that some of the leaders in this company will leave because of this.
Because they'll feel less valued?
Yeah.
That's awful. I think
it's not about less valued. They're not valued
more.
Right.
Because they base their value about other people being treated worse than them.
100%.
It's the worst.
It's part of it. You know what I mean? It's just, it's terrible. Mm-hmm. And I know that drives people.
Yeah.
I've seen it. People find out somebody has more or the same vacation as them, vacation time. Ooh, look out. Look out. Like, it's just, that's the way it is. It's how it is. So you got to be, it's like that one, the payroll company a couple years ago that just gave everybody a raise, a minimum salary amount, and then went above that. You know, it pissed some people off, man. People like the hierarchy system when it comes to comp, and it's, then you can change people, right? You know, it's what kind of company, but it has to be, it's top-down driven every time. It's top-down driven. It's got to be either like you like it or this is how we treat people. Fast Company brings a whole just record-scratching thought to something here of, again, somebody from the HR world, myself. What if we killed the job interview? It says lots of things that job interviews should tell you about a candidate, but don't. And plenty of other things they shouldn't tell you, but do anyways. And it says, what's your top strength? What are your biggest weaknesses? I'm just laughing because this is what I ask people. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? What makes you want to work for us? Who would you play in a movie? Most of us have experienced the futility of job interviews or at least had to answer some of these dreadful questions. Yet it's virtually impossible to get a job without going through the interview and usually more than one. But the trouble is that interviews aren't as useful as employers think. Indeed, organizations can still make great and arguably better hiring decisions without them. What would happen if we all agreed to scrap job interviews tomorrow and focus instead on other indicators of career potential? Unthinkable as it may sound, there are at least three important data points that suggest replacing interviews with other, more predictive measures is a way to go. So the first one says job interviews have limited value for predicting performance, and they cite a really comprehensive scientific study to date on the predictive power of different recruitment tools, suggests that the typical job interview provides very little valuable information over and above psychometric tests, which tend to be both quicker and cheaper to administer. For example, once you know a candidate's score on a test of general learning ability, a typical job interview will only improve your ability to predict their performance in a given role by 4%, the analysis found. Interviews are more useful when they're totally structured and standardized to the point of resembling a multiple-choice questionnaire. This can increase their accuracy by up to 13%, yet very few real-world interviews follow a rigorous format. Interviewers usually prefer to go with the flow, stubbornly relying on their own intuition. Most of the attributes interviewers try to evaluate by gut feel, a candidate's competencies, skills, personalities, values, and quote, culture fit, more rigorously inferred from other data like resumes, simulations, tests, and past performance ratings. Interviews can certainly create opportunities for candidates to make claims about these qualities, but I argue in my latest book, there's little reason to believe them. Indeed, there's not much overlap between the talents people say they have and the ones they actually possess. Plus, interviewers often use the idea of good culture fit to justify hiring people from their own in-groups. Next one was job interviews introduce toxic data, which is about that type of stuff, and which really noise. And interviewer performance and job performance are two very different things. So between this and realizing that things like Myers-Briggs testing is just a load of hooey, that's the problem. I even remember, though, once a VP saying to me, I know within 5 seconds of the start of a job interview if I meet somebody, if I know.
But it's biased. It's all based on bias.
It is. So the answer, and I agree. Like, I was the one answering, what are your biggest weakness? Mostly because I wanted to see them squirm. Right?
I always just work too darn hard.
The two answers,
Scott.
Right?
I just work too darn hard. I'm a perfectionist.
Perfectionist and workaholic.
Yeah, I'm a workaholic.
The two biggest answers. I work too hard or I'm too perfect. Bad answers, by the way, because we know they're full of it.
And if I was an animal, I'd be a lion.
Right. Thank you. Because then I could just tear you apart for asking that question.
It's just like, I understand wanting to meet somebody, I guess, but the bias is such a strong factor that it just seems like there's more harm than good. Does that make sense?
Yeah. By a show of hands, listeners and Wayne, has anybody, you or you yourself, acted differently on a first date than you were?
No.
Right? You know, the rest of your living life.
I don't know what you're getting at, but I'm always on my best behavior.
No, hey, baby, well, you're the same when we met. You're the same.
Obviously, and you clean yourself up and like you're answering questions a certain way.
I did put on deodorant the day we met. I did.
That's exciting.
Yeah, I did not bathe, but I did put on deodorant. It masks well by Menin. This is the issue.
Yeah.
That they don't tell you anything. It's all vibe and feel. And with that, as you said, as you know very well, that it's all your inherent biases are involved. And
which
culture
in
fit.
Dating maybe is okay.
Sure, and you're allowed to.
And if you're biased in dating, it's only going to affect your life and what you decide to do with your path. But if you're biased in hiring, you're going to affect the entire company and you're affecting that individual's right to be able to make a living and all of these things. The bias is too strong, I think.
Yeah, I would, for me, honestly, now, I would hire almost solely based on reference checks.
I would imagine the workplace would look much different if we took out the need to meet in person.
Oh, I would take out the interview. I would take the names off resumes.
Yeah, that's true. That can lead to bias.
Huge
as well.
Bias with names on resumes. Right. I take
just
those
skills.
Out. Yeah. And then it's
experience.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. Amazing with that. And we can even argue with experience depending on the job. So it's just like,
we have
so,
to ask them something. Yeah,
let's throw it all out. Then what are we going to do? I don't know. Whoever shows up gets the job.
You got to do something. But I think skill and experience would be the most, and the references for sure. But the references can be biased as well. Like, you're always looking at how someone left their last job, which isn't always the best way to know how they're going to do in a new company. Things change. But I think skills and experience is where the, at least that removes the bias and gives you the best chance of finding out what they're really like. And of course, they're going to put their best stuff on a resume. But I mean, that's just people. You're not going to be able to make people give you a real snapshot of their life.
Right.
I mean, what are you going to do?
Just go on their Instagram and you'll see.
That's the other way you could find out.
Yeah, I try to be more authentic in our relationship. I haven't worn deodorant in 5-6 years. And it's just really, it's more us. I really feel I feel closer to you, yet you keep getting farther away. I'm trying to figure this out. And even reference checks, though, most companies won't even give them now. Fear of liability and legal.
Because I think if we had the time, like if our HR departments didn't have to run interviews, they'd have more time to actually follow up with references.
I always said when I started HR, it was, I'm going to hire the best people and take as long as I can to do it. And then I got there.
Yeah.
And it was, I need to hire the best person that I can find with the budget I've got and the time strain of 3 days. That's what it came down to.
Yeah.
And to me, a lot of times is not even hiring, is which it is part of the problem. But the bigger problem is onboarding and bringing somebody on and then giving them the feedback and the focus of within that probationary period, which I firmly believe you're always on probation in the workplace, but that 3 months or whatever it is to test them out, you know very quickly if they're going to work with your team well in a week or 2 weeks. But we're not looking at that. We just throw them in the fire. Off you go. And then we come back and like, so what's wrong? What happened? That is so important. And they call it onboarding now, right? But it's orientation back in the day. But it's just bringing somebody on and having them get into the system, into the field, and see if it works. Because it goes two ways. It might not work for me or it might not work for the company. So this is the way I'm just saying that I'm firing myself right now.
No.
Yeah. I'm going to come back. I'm going to retrain.
You got to stay. All right. Sorry.
I'll stick around until next week. Until then, folks, bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and visit theunpodcast.com. And remember, friends don't let friends use QR codes.